Welcome back to the Rights and Wrongs podcast. This is part two of Common Sense and Responsibility in the Gun Debate in America. I am joined by Austin of the Florida Gun Network. If you have not listened to part one, I highly suggest going back and listening to that first. If you have listened to part one, sit back and enjoy. We'll be continuing by talking about registration of firearms, including the National Registry on the debate about machine guns. We then also get into a good conversation about when is the right time to use firearm in force, and when it is a good reason not to use a firearm or force. And we also get into why it's important to have these conversations and how to best talk about guns and gun culture so we can have a safer community in the future. Ironically, I make a few mistakes where I feel I said something that could be easily misunderstood or taken out of context, which I will clarify at the end of this episode. Other than that, I hope you enjoy part two. For the last topic I wanted to talk to you about, we were talking a little bit about registration of firearms. And I wanted to get your view on it. Now, I know you know mine, but I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah. Registration should not be punitive, meaning if the government or sheriff's department, whoever has jurisdiction, thinks I have too many, then they come knocking on my door to take them. Right. And I feel like that's what a lot of people see registration as. It's like putting yourself out there saying, hey, I have all these, and then you're constantly under the barrel, keeping your head low to make sure that you're not saying anything or doing anything that would make you an endangerment to other people or yourself. And then they come home and, you know, next thing you know, you've got FBI or sheriff's department at your front door coming in to take all your guns. But I think it would be especially helpful in the states where there is a duty to inform an officer that you have firearms. Like if you I think it's in Tennessee, there is actually a duty to inform the officer that you have a firearm either on your person or in the vehicle if you're in a traffic stop.
I think we're required in Massachusetts as well, but because of the fact, and a lot of people in Massachusetts get, it's funny that you talk about that a little bit, because like in Massachusetts, we do have a registration because when you buy the gun, like they register it to you and like you just log it and they call it like a backdoor registration. I have no problem with it. But it's interesting though, and I find it kind of a nice thing for the cop's perspective that when I never got asked by a cop if I have a gun on me until the one time I got pulled over on a routine traffic stop. I went through a yellow light, but it was like it was close to red, and I'm not gonna argue. Like it was just like I should have stopped. But it was one of those things where I try to make it, and the cop got me. I'm like, whatever, okay. I walked away without a ticket. The guy was completely respectful. I was respectful to the cop. But he pulled me over, and first time he asked me, he's like, do you have a gun on you? And I realized because he read my plates, and my plates is attached to my driver's license, which is attached to my gun license, and my gun license has my registration of all the guns that I own, even though it was just one.
Oh, jeez.
And some people were like, oh, that's horrible. But it's like, I actually, when I was thinking about it, it's like, as soon as he asked, like, do you have a gun on you? I was like, oh, no, sorry. Like, I just came from work. I didn't have it. He instantly calmed down and relaxed. And it was a very relaxed conversation, more than I've had with, like, other times with officers. And I'm like, yeah, he was tensed up, but like now it's like a little bit easier. And like, but the thing is, it's like now they're kind of knowing. And I was thinking about that with a lot of these issues that we've had with shootings, like police shootings and all this stuff, where there's so many times where like cops, like no knock warrants are such issue where like you have shootouts with cops because someone either they read the address wrong or they kicked down the door or they didn't know. It's like,
yeah,
I feel like if the cops knew you had a gun in that area, like no cop, even if they have a no knock warrant and they go, oh, this person has a gun in there, they're going to announce their presence.
Right.
Like, and I think that, because I think no-knock warrants are, personally, I don't agree with them, unless you're going after, like, a top terrorist head organization James Bond villain. Maybe, right. But I feel like that respect, like, that's like a special federal warrant you should get for that. Other than that, I don't think it is, and I think that would be a nice way to slowly get away from it. It is interesting you bring up that comment. I've heard people make the statement about, oh, they feel like they're going to get penalized for gun ownership. And like when you first said that, the thing popped in my head. It was like, I'm not sure how it is in your state, but in Massachusetts, you lose your right to own a gun if you have a restraining order against you or you commit a crime of any sort or convicted of a crime of any sort, which like I have no problem with that. Like there are issues with the restraining order process. Yeah, but that's a whole other conversation. Like, does it add intersectionality into it? Yes, but I don't think that you don't want to make getting a restraining order too difficult because then they're kind of pointless. But that's a whole nother conversation. But I've never really seen that where, like, because coming from a state where, like, I have friends that have lots and lots and lots of guns, I've never heard the owner, like, I've never heard of the cops knocking on, you have too many. Now, if you turned out and you bought, like we said, a couple hundred pounds of black powder, I understand why the FBI is knocking on your door. Or if you just show up and, like, I don't think people in Massachusetts care if you have 30 guns, but if you show up to the store and buy 30 AK-47s, one city, like, I think you warrant an FBI knocking on your door at that point. Like, so that's where I'm always asking. It's just like, if you had the FBI knock on your door for a gun purchase, what did you buy is what I want to know.
Right. Well, I think the, at least in Florida, I forget what the form you have to fill out. I think it's a 4470. But I think the limit for a single form is three guns.
I think Mass is about the same. I know, yeah. I know a lot of people are freaking out in Virginia because they passed the law you can only buy one gun a month. Which I kind of thought was like, one I'm looking at, it's like, okay, if we're going to limit like 12 guns in a year, like, honestly, that's a lot of guns in a year. But it was weird how they, like, I would rather you limit 12 guns a year, not one a month, because, like, I was thinking, if me and my partner go out to go hunting, because we're thinking about it, like, I have to buy two guns, one for myself, one for her. Right. And it's just like, do I wait a month? Or, like, a lot of times, like, you get good deals that, like, if I buy a new revolver, I was thinking about buying, because I like revolvers. It is, I'll probably buy a lever action in the same caliber, but like it just sounds weird. Like if I want it now, like, and I see it now, I want it now. Like it just seems like a strange thing. But if you want to limit my yearly purchases, that's one thing. But monthly just seems like a very strange. Like even 6 months, like you want to go six every 6 months. Okay, that seems. It's weird to limit a purchase, but that sounds more reasonable than what they did.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of these arguments are. Do I agree with doing an armed protest? Not so much. Like, that's just... guns and protests just...
Yeah.
I get the sentiment, but it's just... You're not helping the cause.
Yeah, and there's actually wording in Florida statutes. It's called places of nuisance. And that's basically like... There's a particular road just down the way from where I live, and it's seen as very strippers and hookers and prostitutes and...
So like Times Square in the 80s?
Right. So that would be what they consider a place of nuisance, is because it's got so much illegal activity.
Which, like, that goes to a whole nother thing. It's like when you're talking about like prostitution and strippers and stuff like that, like that is probably one of the closest, if you're only talking that specific crime, and I'm using quotation marks, it's a victimless crime for the most part. Like, I'm not talking about sex trade, and I'm not talking like that, like those are problems, but if you're talking like actual consenting adults in a business transaction, yeah. Like it's one of those places where America's like over religion and over Protestantism. We're just creating problems for ourselves half the time, and losing tax dollars. Oh, but like that was like a nuisance area, so like they just don't want people having guns there, or.
Well, I mean, it's if you were to, I mean, if you were to get pulled over, or you know. Stopped with reasonable cause, it wouldn't be seen as an issue if you were just passing through. Mm. But if you're just hanging out, sitting on the corner, waiting for somebody to come by, And cop pulls up and talks to you, and he's like, yeah, you have any guns? And you're like, oh, yeah, I have this one right here. It's on me. And that would be an issue. You're basically hanging out in the place of nuisance where you know that you could possibly use it. Like, you're looking for trouble.
Yeah, that goes back to, like, responsible gun ownership. And, yeah. Like, don't look for a fight. And it is a very interesting thing, too. I was listening to, like, other people talk about it. And it's a conversation we don't have a lot with people, is why are you buying this gun? Because I know you always say get the job done, and it's always interesting, what is this job that you're talking about? Like, I understand most of the time you're talking about, like, personal defense. Like, an AR-15 is great for getting the job done if the job is war.
Right.
And if you're buying this because to protect yourself from tyranny, it's like, I'm not ever going to say buying an assault rifle is a treasonous act, but, like, if you're strictly buying this because you're thinking about overthrowing the government, there's a... like, I don't want to... I'm not trying to, like, paint all AK-47 or AR-15 owners, because, like, I'll probably buy one in the future, and I'm not, like... but, like, when I go for it, it's... why are you buying this gun? I think is also a very important question, because if you're buying it for self-defense, or, like, an assault rifle, where you live, it can be a reasonable self-defense weapon. Like, if you have one in the back of your truck because you live in the middle of Arizona or Texas and your car breaks down, I don't want to be caught in the middle of Arizona, in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the night with a broken car without a gun.
Right.
Don't want to be one. And if I'm going to have one, might as well be an assault rifle. If I live in the backwoods of Alaska, grizzly bear are a thing. And I'm not going to try and wolves are a thing. And wolves don't travel in one or two packs. So your Joe Biden special side-by-side isn't going to really help you after the third one comes and gets you.
Yeah.
And for people that don't know, a Joe Biden special is a joke we call a double-barrel shotgun, which is an effective home defense gun in certain situations. But know your situation. And I think that's a huge conversation there. People say know your audience, but... know what you're going. Like me, I carry my personal gun that I chose was a 357 Model 65 stainless steel revolver. And the reason I chose it, Massachusetts, there's no extended magazine on a revolver. Perfectly fine. Ammunition isn't an issue because I can shoot 38 or 357 Magnum. Massachusetts has really strong restrictions. We look at the positive rights. So meaning if you don't, we don't say you can't own something, you can't own it. But like Smith & Wesson's from Massachusetts, really high quality gun. And it's like, if I need parts, they have a lifetime warranty. For me, it makes sense to own this gun, but like that's the thing, is I made the choice for why I have it. It's one, it was my range gun, two, it was my self-defense gun when I needed it, but I don't need a self-defense gun 90% of the times. I think I've carried it on me a total of 5 times, 3 times I was hiking, but that's because we have coyote, and I was up in like New Hampshire or something, and
right.
That's a good trail gun. That's what I needed, and half the time I kept snake shot in it because rattlers are a thing in New England. People don't know that, but it is.
Right.
But that's where I think another conversation goes, is like, why are you buying it? And if you're buying it because you think it's going to make you look cool, or this makes me a man, which that's a whole other issue of toxic masculinity, or like gives you power, maybe you're that person that shouldn't buy a gun.
Exactly.
I know I just went on a really long tangent about that, but like that's where I just want to make sure is like, because that's one reason I'll get you talk about your podcast in a minute, but one reason I really enjoyed your podcast, because you do talk about these things. It's like, make sure you get the gun to get the job done. But I think an important thing to know is, what is this job and why are you buying it? Because just because you have the right to buy a gun in the United States doesn't mean that you should. And
right.
That's something I don't think we hear. Like, one side sometimes say no one should have a gun, and the other side saying everyone should have a gun. But I just kind of think it's a personal choice and right, and you should really – it is a weapon. You can easily kill someone with a car, but the point of a car is to drive. A point of a gun is to shoot a bullet, which is designed to kill things, so, like, be responsible with it. And
right.
Really sit down, and before you buy a gun, do you really need one? Because, like, tasers are a thing. Personally, I don't see any negatives in taking a self-defense course. You're getting exercise, which is good. They exercise mental and communication skills most of the time. And you'll learn to defend yourself. And
even if you get yourself into shape, you might be fast, like, get yourself fit enough to run away from the situation and let the cops handle it, because that's their job.
No, I mean, yeah, it's entirely what you plan on doing with it. And I think that, like you said, if you're out in the middle of, even down in Florida, we have country where people are miles from a road and they have land. It's like, okay, well, but at the same time, I can see, like, the argument for, like, oh, I need more bullets or whatever, but you could also argue the fact that if you're having to use a rifle, you could safely assume that the threat is probably more than 100 yards.
Yeah.
And at that point, unless they're throwing Molotovs or hand grenades...
At 100 yards, that's an impressive arm. Like, that guy needs to be a first-draft football player.
But, you know, at 100 yards, it doesn't sound like they'd be really much of a threat.
No, and, like, that's the truth of it is... Like, you talked about, like, in one of your classes, episodes, you're talking about, like, knife fights. And the stuff is like, personally, if you're close enough that that knife is a threat, you're too close to use a gun. Because you're just as equally handling over to the guy when you pull it out. Because it takes, I'm guaranteeing you're not fast enough to pull it out and use it. You might be, but I'm just going off, like, the majority of people, like, especially if it's concealed carried. But if you're far enough away that you can safely, like, there's a gray area between this. Like, there is a what I call, like, a yellow zone, where you're close enough that he's a threat, but you're far enough to effectively use your handgun. But for the most part, if you're far enough away to pull your handgun out in safe and time, you're probably far enough away to run away from that situation.
Exactly.
And that's a conversation you very rarely hear.
Yeah, and of course, there's the 21-foot rule. Mythbusters did an episode on that. They said, can bringing a knife to a gunfight actually help you? And they did exactly that. They had the guy that had the little BB gun or pellet gun or whatever, and or maybe the ammunition, I don't know.
Those things hurt so much.
Yeah. But they had a guy, and of course it was a plastic knife, but they had a sensor on the tip of the blade so that whenever it made contact with the guy with the gun, it would light up, but it would turn a light on, making just saying, hey, the knife has made contact, this guy's dead. But they actually did the research, and a guy coming at you at full speed, and if you don't already have your firearm out, it takes a second and a half average to pull it out. God forbid if you don't have one in the chamber, rack it, aim it, and then pull the trigger. It takes about 1.5 to 2 seconds for you to be able to do that. It took the guy with the knife from 15 feet, it took him about half a second to get to that.
Hmm. So, yeah, there is that, but, like, also at that point where I'm also saying, if you're dealing with someone with a knife, I'm not really sure if you want to, because if he slashes your arm as you're pulling the gun out, well, now the gun's useless, but, two, like, he might be able to scramble for it as well. And when I'm talking about these scenarios, like, if you're in a one-on-one scenario and you can run away, run away. If they're threatening someone else, that's a different story in these made-up scenarios. Like, there's no such thing as a perfect scenario. We can come up with 1,000 scenarios, and someone's going to come up in the comments and be like, well, if this was that and it was raining on Venus and just...
Yeah.
I get it. Not every single one. I'm just saying, use common sense and just learn what it best is. Because, like, I always hear, like, it's better to be judged by... What is it? Better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. I studied criminal justice. Trials can go very badly. Like, read the story of, like, Life After Death on the West Memphis 3, or read about the Central Park 5. Like, you could be 100% innocent and still go to jail. Like, don't, and adding a gun over a dead body, I don't think for the most part is going to end in your favor. So, like, that statement I've always found as a really
That's for someone that doesn't study criminal, like, some study or just, like, watch law. Like, that would, that one always, like, kind of burns my brain. But that's a whole nother conversation. But no, it is a true point when it comes to this. And again, I just want to push, when I'm not trying to say anyone that's buying an assault rifle is tyranny. It was just an example. But I have a feeling a lot of people are going to hate me on that. And just like, personally, like, we were talking about it. I just find AR-15s boring, but like, it's probably a good thing they're boring because I'm very comfortable with them and it's a good gun. It's just, I carried one for way too long.
Either that or you got Siri listening and she's gonna, you know.
Oh, I am not. I don't own any iPod and new iStuff.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I want to, like, any of the listeners on both sides realize is, and I think you made a really good point about this, was you probably, if you don't own guns, you probably know someone that does. And anyone that owns guns, I guarantee you know someone that's against them. But I think it's really good to just sit back, and I hope we talked about things and opened up people's views, that if you're for or against them, there are civil conversations to be had, and like, you really should. I think it will help the society as a better to understand the other side and like, look at these point of views. One of my mantras for this podcast is you have to understand to agree. Or at least you should, but you don't have to agree to understand. And I think this is one of those pinnacle pod like topics where as soon as you don't agree with them, they refuse to understand. And I think that's really bad.
Right. And that's the thing too, like, there've been so many, you know, we've seen time and time again, if two people don't agree on an issue one to one, then it's an all out civil war, especially if they're far left or right. It's not so much with the moderate, you know, the left, slightly leaning left or right. Usually you can reason with those people. But you really don't hear much about the far right being as radical as the left. And meaning, like, you don't see, with the exception of the insurrection at the Capitol, any violent riots or two groups back, you know, when Antifa and, say, this random motorcycle group that supported President Trump and followed him all the way around the country came together and hashed it out with each other in the streets.
Well, there are, like, yeah, it is. There's a lot of differences, but, like, even as you and I both said, like, there are differences in how they responded, and, like, there are some strange, the riots, whether you're talking BLM or the Trump one, there's just so many factors to go out there that when people try and compare them, I'm like, you're basically comparing quantum physics to, like, astrology at that point. And it's just, like, there are things that are together in that, but, like, there's so many other different factors that break that I just try not to compare, because, like, I think one of the strangest things is, like, when some people say, like, well, BLM had more. It's like, yeah, but they never charged the Capitol. Like, it's like, yeah.
It's hard in that sense.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing about it, though. It was just because the truth is, like, yeah, if they did charge the Capitol, they would get shot, because our country has racial issues. But it's also, like, when people compare, it's like, well, Kid A stole 50 cents 12 times, but Kid B stole $1,000 once. And it's like, one, like, you should have learned, like, you let this kid steal 50 times, like, okay, like, that's shame on, like, fool me once, like, okay. But the other point is, like, the other person stole $1,000 and the other person, what, scared $5? Like, I don't. It's comparing apples and oranges on the, like, when you talk about that. And it is weird because I think the gun topic is one of those where it is a lot more complicated than people think, or in some issues and more simplified, but they try to compare apples and oranges when they have these arguments. And you're just having two people scream at each other and having two different conversations.
Yeah. That's the reason why I don't participate in political debates on social media anymore, because it's, one, not going to change people's minds as much as we would like to think it would, and it alienates people more than bringing them together to fight for a common cause. Like, we were talking about before, how the left doesn't want people to have them at all, and then the right is like, yeah, we want people to have them, but we want the right people to have them.
And that the left is, like, what I was trying to say before on that was, like, the left wants to take away the guns from us, but then give them to the people that they feel are worthy, where the other side was that. But, yeah, it's
But the other thing is, like, yes, some people on the left do want to completely get rid of all guns in the sun.
Yeah.
I feel for the most time, that's just a loud minority for the most part. I think, because that's the thing I find really interesting about the gun debate, from my personal view of looking at it. I feel like most people are moderate center when it comes to gun rights. It's just, they get scared of the left because, like, they feel more comfortable with the left sometimes because the left's like, we want everyone on this. And they're like, just like talking gun control. But a lot of times when you hear other people, they hear gun control and they think banning. And like, gun control is this very large spectrum where banning all the guns is at this really far end that's over there. But then like a lot of people in the moderate see the NRA and it's like, we just want to like get rid of all regulation. And if you don't understand what they mean by like which regulations, or you're talking state regulations or federal, but some groups do on the right just want to get rid of all regulation. It's like, do I want control or give it to everybody? And like, there's these intersections where a lot of the times where like, it's fascinating. And like anyone that's like new to this debate or like, or you're on the other side, there are thousands of gun organizations who read their policies and what they want to do. Some pro-gun rights groups and some pro-gun control groups literally have the same goals in mind, like verbatim. They just want to go about a different way. And like, it amazes me because like these two groups, if you've got these two people next to each other, they start screaming at each other, automatically hate each other. It's like, you guys want the same things. You're just taking different approaches at it, which I think you should sit down and figure out a better way to do it and work together instead of trying to fight each other on it. But
yeah, and you know, we've been calling for unity, and I think this new administration is going to be doing more of that. But I just don't think fighting in this way is the way to do that.
Yeah, it's, and that's the reason like I find gun rights so fascinating. It's just because like I study I love sociology, I love human rights. Gun rights are in the self-defense form of rights, but gun rights are not a human right. I'm sure someone's going to argue me on that, but it's a civil right. Like, it's a civil right. Certain countries get along fine without guns. Like, I'm in the UK, don't feel like cops don't carry them here. If they do, like, that's a problem. And the truth is, it's like, I'm more scared of a Scottish cop with a shield than I am most American guns, cops with a gun. Because they will kick your ass with that shield.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, you see all these videos from, like, overseas in Pakistan and Iraq and even Scotland, you know, people are down on the ground, they're beating them to a pulp. It's like, see, you know, cops in America aren't so bad after all, are they?
Well, it's also, I think it's a lot to do with Sioux culture, because like, if you listen to like episode 4 and talking other things, like one of my old criminal justice professors is a huge fan of the baton. But the reason we're scared to use batons is because we have a huge Sioux culture in the United States.
Right.
Like you crack someone in the knee with that and they can't walk anymore, like the department's gonna get sued. It's kind of weird that we've kind of backed our cops into a scenario where it's either do nothing or kill someone. And that's a societal issue at the same point. But no, that's one thing I always want to talk about this conversation. And like anyone that's also listening, one other debate I want to talk about is the registration of machine guns, because it's interesting how you and I both agree on this.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean we both agree that having unregistered machine guns act like actual machine guns is not good. I couldn't figure out a better way to say that.
It's scary, to be honest. Like, it's legitimately terrifying, because for anyone that doesn't know, we have, I think it was this machine gun ban of 1984. It was not a ban, but like they closed the registry in 1984, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So the NFA actually became a thing in 1934. Mm. But I know it was like 84 or something like that. Like the machine gun weapons ban or whatever, like actual machine guns.
And you can buy machine guns. The problem is you can't add new guns to the registry. It's one of the only national registries of firearms is machine guns and destructive devices such as artillery pieces that aren't black powder. 50 caliber rifles don't count, even though I find that like ridiculous, but okay. That's a discussion for another time. But basically you can't add any more guns, but if they already were pre-registered, you can legally buy them if you feel like selling your car and your house.
Right. Well, cause I know a couple people that either have questions about the guns that they have, or they know they have them and they're like, I don't want to tell anybody because it'll get me in trouble, you know, whatever. But I think they should open it, open the registry, as well as for other NFA items, such as like sawed-offs, SBSs or SBRs.
Suppressors.
Right.
Which I think you still can add to the NFA suppressors. I think that's like one of the few in short barrel rifles.
Yes.
Machine guns are the only ones you can't add.
You can do that. Yeah. But I would like to see them have the owner, like, say, for hypothetical purposes, if somebody got passed down, technically, quote, a short barrel rifle, or even just a sawed off shotgun from who knows however long ago, I would like to see them have the owner fill out an affidavit stating that they received it through a family member as a hand-me-down. Of course, pre-1934, which when the NFA went into effect.
No, and that's true. And the one thing I will say is, like, the reason why anyone's going here, it's like, well, if they're holding onto these machine guns aren't registered, like, clearly they're criminals and, like, all that stuff. It's like, the one reason why they don't want to is if they bring them out, they're not going, like, if you show and they tell, like, the ATF or you tell someone that they have it, they have to destroy it. And this is a piece of history. You're not sure if this is an MG42, like a one of a kind. This is the gun that my grandpappy brought back from World War One or World War Two or Korea or Vietnam. They don't want to destroy it and they don't want to like hide it. So it's there. And like, because it's there, someone could break in and steal it, or someone in that family member could find out it has and they have an issue. And that's like one reason I think machine guns are one of those few things that definitely should be, because you're talking a machine gun. Like, that's a very bad, like, we saw what can happen with a pseudo machine gun at the Las Vegas issue.
Oh yeah.
So they are dangerous items, and anyone that, yeah, like, you want to make sure they're in the right hands. But for anyone that's gonna be, it's like, well, why can't we just give them up and give them to a museum? Museums don't have special permission to take a machine gun that's activated. So if you give them to them, you're gonna have to deactivate it, which you're going to do on yourself. And that means like weld, like put lead down the barrel, weld the parts to just thing. So you might as well just get it destroyed anyways at that point.
Exactly.
And the sad thing is, like, a lot of museums out there sadly do this anyways. You can give them a fully functioning machine gun, but they get scared from, what's that old movie with, it was like the movie where like they had to bring the guy back from time and he like grabs the shotgun off the museum and starts killing people with it. People think that's going to happen. Where I guarantee it's not, because if some, like, I don't think that's going to happen. But, like, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll take the firing pin out of the gun. I'm like, that's fine. But, like, you can, some guns, the firing pin's built into it, or you might lose it or break it because it's fragile. And, like, if you want to go know more about this, I would really suggest listening to the podcast called History Unloaded, because it's by two gun curators at museums. That, like, one used to work at Smithsonian, they both work at the Cody Firearm Museum, and they talk about this, like, in depth about how museums destroy guns because they're scared of this, which is just strange, because it's just like someone destroying the Mona Lisa just because they're tired of the controversy if she's smiling or not, so they just choose one. And that's essentially what's happening here, and it's kind of sad, but at the same point, like, people are scared to get this piece of their family history destroyed. And it's kind of, this whole entire reminds me of Fahrenheit 451, where even if they're pro-gun or not pro-gun, or in that, they might not be pro-book, they just don't want to see it get destroyed, so they hoard it.
Right.
And it's just, for somebody like me, it's like, well, if these monies come out, we can tax it. Let them donate it to the museum. If the museum doesn't want it, let them sell it and use it for that, or let them give it up to charity and let it go on the market, and, like, they're going to make money off of it. Like, that's something to go out there. And at least then it's registered. We know who they are. We know who they're at. We're protecting and preserving a piece of history. Even if you did it for like a 6-month period and waited for them to come out, yeah. I feel like, and then close it again. And there might only be, let's even say there's only 10 machine guns out there that are unregistered. That's still a lot of damage that can be done.
That's, yeah.
So I know I like this, because, like, I feel like I lean a little bit more left on the firearm world, like a little bit more on the gun control.
and it's interesting to hear, like, because you sound to be on gun control, but more, a little bit more on the right side than me. But it just, this is a common sense. Like, there's certain guns that don't deserve to be out there. Like, I don't think anyone should own a nuclear bomb. Or, so I'm going to open up for questions. So if any of my listeners have questions, but I've been waiting, I haven't seen any. I did want to give you a chance to talk about your podcast.
Yeah, I used my experience as a firearm instructor to really take the knowledge that I had learned from doing that and give it to the people that ask questions, because that's what I did. People ask questions, and I was the one responsible for giving them the answer, or something close to an answer. And I just feel like the people that are going to ask questions don't really necessarily know a whole lot about the field. So it's not, I mean, you'll have the few that are, but it's not, oh, well, what if I do this and he has this kind of gun and I'll just shoot a bullet down the barrel before he can shoot me? It's like, okay, no, that's never going to happen. But yeah, it's just a, I don't know why I took like the Q&A approach, but I just kind of ran with it. I didn't mention this before, but I was also in Boy Scouts, and I'm an Eagle, actually.
Congrats, I never got that far. I got up to Star, I think, is the highest I got.
Okay, yeah. So that came with the territory. You're shooting 22s, shotgun, never did handgun.
Is there handgun merit badge? Because we only did shotgun, archery, and rifle at my camp.
Those were the main ones, yeah. The shotgun, rifle, and archery. Yeah, we never had handguns.
Yeah, I don't think that's a merit badge. Like, so.
No. Well, they had better make it one.
I'm not sure.
I take it back. I was kidding.
No, it just someone's gonna be like, yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. It's just like, I really enjoyed shooting 22s, but I remember like they made sure that we had like really heavy guns for the young kids, so they could barely pick it off. They couldn't pick them off the table.
Right. Yeah, that was usually a shotgun for me.
Oh.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, I'll take any questions that people throw my way and do my due diligence and research on it if I don't know the answer. But like I say, in the podcast, short of being a lawyer or an attorney, I can't provide much legal advice, but I do what I can, and it seems to help me get by.
I think it's interesting too, because looking through podcasts, I was looking for, because I want to do this conversation on guns, and I want this to be a segment, because I feel like we need to get as many different perspectives, left, right, in between, outer space, that we can on this, because it's something we can't get right for some reason, because most people aren't willing to have the conversation.
Right, and that's the thing, like, as soon as you, I had mentioned before, as soon as you don't agree with somebody on something, it's a civil war, and then people don't want to talk, and then that's a huge issue for me. I mean, even when I was involved in the political debates, as soon as you say something that they don't like, you're automatically a racist, sexist, bigot, xenophobe. So, and then they don't want to ever talk to you ever again. It's like, no, we need to talk. I understand that you don't want to, but we need to, because you're not the conversation and the stances that we both have, it's not doing either of us any good not to talk about it. That's why we started having the conversation, is because we wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, and it's also interesting too, because one thing I found very fascinating was, like, I was looking at a group called Pink Pistols, which, like, as I said before, was a LGBT group. But they accept everyone, and they want more people in, and it almost seems as if they're trying to use the enjoy of a hobby to get people to – this is already a controversial topic, Is it like, okay, we come from different backgrounds, suppose, like, if it's someone that's not in that community, but, like, we enjoyed this controversial topic, maybe I can use this to bridge a gap on another controversial topic and introduce you to another culture that you're not, which I think is an interesting way that guns can also be used to, like, help other issues, which I never thought of before. Right. I was aware of these groups.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, and we mentioned before that firearms being such a sensitive topic, as soon as you say one thing that you have no problem with, but somebody else does, they're like, oh, nope, don't want to talk to you anymore. Don't do anything. Don't look at me. Don't. Yeah.
And oh, I can think of at least like 12 things I've said. Well, I was going to say, I think about 12 things I said on this podcast that someone's going to be like, you're like, I don't want to like deal with it. I think of like the tyranny with the M16's comment, the fact that I don't like the NRA comment.
Right.
I believe that like stricter licensing, like I can just think of a ton of people like not liking it. But then on the other side, like, oh, I'm pro gun. There's so many, and it's one of these really like hot button topics that you deal with that. And it's just one of those kind of things where I just kind of wanted to, like, if you have an issue with that, I don't accept 100% of your opinions. There's a lesson that, like, accept that you might be wrong. Like, and that's the way I look at it. Whenever I try and have a conversation, I try to look in. I might be wrong. And I don't know if I'm wrong about something until I listen to the other side completely.
Right.
Because
I don't feel that you have completely expanded on your stance of it until you have another side.
Yeah, and the stance can always change. Like, that was like the conversation we had on the pre-interview where I was thinking like, oh my, like, well, you should be training on the gun that you're going to use, but we can't in Massachusetts. And then I'm like, oh, because I don't have that Florida perspective that you guys actually do that. Maybe that's something that needs to be changed in Massachusetts on certain ways, or like how we do our training in Massachusetts for better. And it was also funny too, because like as soon as I saw your network and like I saw that you had it and I saw Florida Gun Network, I was like kind of like hesitant. Should I contact this person? Because let's be honest, Florida Man is great for memes, but I'm like, huh, Florida Man and guns.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times Florida Man has come up in conversation.
Oh.
Especially because I'm not a transplant. Like, I was born and raised here. Yeah.
But that's the whole other thing too. It's just like, I made sure to like be aware. It's like, okay, just like I wanted your, like I listened to your podcast. Like, and the thing people go on is like, before I even contact you, I listened to a couple of your episodes. And, but like, I had to like get past that title. And like, it was, because you, most people that don't realize that are from other parts of the country, there is a North versus South thing in the United States still.
Mm-hmm.
It's unspoken a lot of the times, sometimes more spoken, but there is something there, and it was just like, I wasn't sure, but like the thing is, I had to also get over like myself. It's like, he's just another American from another place. I want to hear his perspective, and like that's something that I feel like a lot of people won't do. And like, I'm sure a lot of people, as soon as they find out I'm a Massachusetts gun owner, they think, oh, that's like an oxymoron in itself. And it's no yeah, it's not. Like, you're from the People's Republic of Massachusetts. Like, I'm from the Commonwealth, thank you very much. But no, and I think it's really good. And that's the reason I also really did, and I really do enjoy listening to yours. It's funny being a fellow podcaster, though, because like the way when you say something, or like, I noticed my northern biases on some of the issues, and or like when you talked about body armor, and I'm like, oh, those are really good points, but like I would add like these because my experience in the military. And I think that's very interesting with guns, though, is when you have this conversation, you have to be aware of different perspectives. Because like, I'm not trying to go out here and like, as you like to say, like, there's people out there, if you don't buy an AR-15 and a Glock, you're stupid. It's like, I don't like Glocks. Like, yeah, I can't buy them in Massachusetts because I'm not a cop, but like, I just don't like them. I find them boring. I'm a revolver guy, but I'm not going to tell someone else, right, you have to buy a revolver. No.
Yeah.
Another thing, when I was like, when listening to your about body armor, I'm like, oh, you didn't really focus on like women's body armor, which is something to think about, but I'm not gonna be like, oh, he's ignorant, doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like, no, you just probably never thought about it because it is such an obscure, different perspective. But a lot of people in the gun community, as soon as you don't know something than them, like, they're like, oh, I'm so much smarter than you. It's like, we've all watched Forgotten Weapons, like, we've all watched In Range, like, there's a lot of information out there on the internet. I get that, but
yeah.
But we didn't get any other questions. I was going to ask if you had any final thoughts that you wanted to cover, and...
Yeah. Not really, other than just saying, you know, I've enjoyed the actual decent conversation. I've talked to a coworker of mine, and he's actually from London. And so, of course, he grew up, you know, not around guns, but we were working together early in the morning, and I said something, and I don't even remember what I said, but that triggered him to start up a conversation about it. And we actually had a decent conversation, and I was like, you know what? I respect you a whole lot more now, because a lot of people don't want to talk about this. And you and I just talked about this for an hour, like actually talked about it and made valid points.
Well, that's the fascinating thing too, is like, I enjoy talking about it, and I probably drive some of my colleagues here in the UK insane, but some of them are thoroughly interested by it because it just isn't a thing here. Gun culture just, it went away like in the early 19th century, and like they just never grew up with it. Yeah, people always joke about Glasgow because like, oh, you're most likely to get stabbed with Glasgow, which I will clarify. You're no more likely to get stabbed in Glasgow than anywhere else in the world. But if you do get stabbed here, you're more likely to get stabbed multiple times.
Oh,
which just kind of means like it's one of those situations where you didn't learn the first time, I guess. I don't know. If you did something to get stabbed, like, and you do it again, like, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just a Glaswegian joke. But it is interesting, too, to, like, have these conversations, because a lot of people are interested in it, but I think they're scared, and I think it's one of these topics where, and there are a lot of, there's some YouTubers out there and some podcasts out there, like, such as yourself, that I think do it right, and there's a lot that I think that do it wrong on both sides.
Yeah.
And it's ignorance on both sides, and, like, before someone goes, like, yeah, those lefts are ignorant, it's like, no, it's like, some of you guys on the right side are extremely arrogant flaws, too, and, like, why they're there.
Right.
Like, you just don't agree with it. Like, not agreeing with something is not a reason that something is stupid.
Right.
Because you and I both talked, yeah, there's a lot of stupid laws out there that we don't agree with, but...
Yeah, we could get into a logic conversation and...
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, that's... We've been on here long enough. But I did want to say thank you very much for getting on here. If anyone is interested, and I strongly suggest going, because your podcasts are like these cute, I don't want to say cute, well, that was a weird word, like these tiny, sorry, I don't even know where that came from, easily digestible, short, like 10 to 15 minutes podcast, because you answer questions, and like, I like how you just let people zoom in. I kind of wish you could write a message to you, but you just send you a voice message, and then you'll answer the question, and I think you do a great job of looking at many different angles from it, and you don't try to, from all the questions I've heard you answer, I don't think you can try to make anyone feel stupid, even though, like, it might sound like a strange question, some of them, like, how many bullets should I carry?
Right.
Well, like, well, less than 100, I guess, it depends on what you're doing.
Just get a big old drum, and yeah.
If you're not walking around with a bullet chain, you're not cool.
You know, this isn't saying like, oh, well, I only accept questions from people who don't know anything about guns. I only want new people. No, like, if you're torn between, say, a Glock or a 1911 or a revolver, I'll give you my honest opinion on why I think that each one has its own place. And hopefully to help you make a decision for your future purchases. So, because that's what I did at the range too. You know, I had people that had all sorts of experience who asked me questions, and then I had people who had no experience who also asked me questions. So it's not open just to the novices and the inexperienced with firearms. Like, I'll take any question. Is 9mm better than 45? Is doing the shotgun racking noise going to scare a burglar away in the middle of the night?
It might, no, it's but not. It's nice to have a bullet in there just in case.
Right. If you're going to have the shotgun, get the bullet. Or the cartridge, rather. Somebody's going to get on me about that.
Yeah, it's fine.
So,
I think my favorite argument, though, like my favorite argument, which always gets me confused when people are very anti-gun, they're like, the Second Amendment was written for when it was muskets, not AR-15s. And it's like, yeah, but the musket you hunted with was the musket you went to war with. That's kind of how we found this country. So it was the AR-15 of its time. But that also going back, if a guy walks in really pissed off holding a musket, I am terrified because he is confident with a giant spear at the end of that thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
You can't do a mass shooting with a musket, but just, like, if he points it at you, like, that guy is confident as hell.
Yeah, he has no wavering self-confidence whatsoever.
Yeah, that's just... And I understand the logic behind it. It was like, yeah, like, there is the whole thing, well, like, we really don't need militias anymore because you have the National Guard and the police that now handle that because militias are illegal under the federal law, but most states make state militias are illegal. So there's difference between state and fed. Definition militia, like, we don't need militias because you do have police and, like, that's and sheriffs and, like, other stuff. So there's a lot of old arguments that get thrown around where short logic makes sense, long-term logic kind of gets fuzzy.
Yeah.
And that's, like, when you get into, like, the talk about the logic and legal and all this other stuff. But no, I did enjoy that because it was just interesting because, like I said, like, me coming from my point of view, you get answers, like, when you were talking about, like, giving advice on handguns, which is a great one. It was, I was always thinking, like, well, your laws also apply. Because, like I said, I carry a revolver because magazine limitations don't apply. Like, which is just a different take on it. I thoroughly enjoyed having you on. And as I said, if you're interested in his podcast, you can find him on Spotify, I think Apple Podcasts as well. And are you on TuneIn or iHeart?
I don't believe so. I don't think so.
Just find him at Florida Gun Network and you can ask him a question. And if you're a novice or an expert, I don't think any of us are truly experts when it comes to this. And there's always something new you can learn. Thank you again, Austin, for being on here.
All right. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for listening to part two of Common Sense and Responsibility in the American Gun Debate. There's two things I said here that can be easily taken out of context or misunderstood. The first being that when I made the statement that if you buy a gun, such an AR, to fight against tyranny, that could be a level of treason. Where I was basically going at with that was intent when you buy something, in the sense that if you're buying a gun specifically to fight against the government, which is treason, that's the same as buying a gun specifically for homicide. No, I wasn't saying that you don't have the right to defend yourself or revolution. My ancestors fought in the American Revolution, but there's a difference of having a firearm and then using it in self-defense against an individual and government, and buying a gun to specifically go out and murder or insurrect against a government. The second statement I made when I said, like, the multiple protests that turned to riots, when I said the first one, shame on you, second one, shame on me, this is not pointing either way. The fact that we are letting peaceful protests, even a small number of peaceful protests, turn into riots is an issue that is on us as a society for our lack of ability to listen to others that are trying to let us know that there's an issue and problems in our nation. And clearly we're learning the wrong lessons from these riots if they're continuing to happen. I don't usually like to make a habit of reiterating things that I said, but when it comes to issues such as firearms and the protest of killing of minorities, these are very hot button issues. And because of our failure to have clear communication on these topics, they will continue to be areas of tension. Now, thank you for listening to this podcast. As I said, if you enjoyed Austin, you can find him on the Florida Gun Network. If you have an issue with either these two statements that I just made or anything else that was made through the podcast, feel free to contact me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear your opinion. This is a place where everyone's voices are welcome. If you want to be on the podcast, contact me there, or you can even submit articles that you want to write. I have a articles page on the website that's www.rightsandwrongspodcast.com, where the articles are written by people like you. You hear my voice every week. I don't think you want to hear it anymore. If you enjoy the podcast and you like what we're doing here, consider supporting us on Patreon at rightsandwrongspod@patreon.com. You can also donate directly through PayPal, or you can buy some merch. Like, we just got a new shirt out there. You can buy hats and you can buy mugs. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and I'll see you next week.